Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Well, hello there, everyone. And it's just one of those really, really busy days where honestly, this day started out to be one way, and now it's quite another way. And it's all good, I think. I'm going to find out in mere moments because we had one of those situations happen technically that could either pave the way for really exciting times or we have to go to plan B. In any case, we have one of the most amazing artists that I know of on the line right now. And before I do anything else, here's what I'm going to do. Hold on just a second because there is actually something that's noisy in the background here, and I know I sound all scattered. It wasn't supposed to be that way at all. Hold on just a second. I have never done that in the almost 3 years that I've done the show, but I just want absolute quiet. So there's a lot of neighbor noise. I had to close the actual door to the show for the show because we're doing this in actually overlooking the balcony of my place. And there's all this construction outside that was not expected. So that's what the big situation is. Please make welcome one of the cooler beings on the planet, positive all the time, one of the most revered, successful, and internationally, how can I say this, embraced guitarists, producer, composer. Brand new things are happening with this man, and we're going to get to it right now. Ladies and gentlemen, please make welcome my friend Ken Navarro. Hey, Ken!
Hey, Trish. Wow, what a nice introduction. I like that word, embraced. It's interesting. I mean, that's a nice way to think of the music, being embraced. Thank you for putting it that way.
Absolutely. Listen, Ken, we didn't have that much time before the show started when we were talking in private conversation, but honestly, what is it about you? You just don't even realize the magnitude of your music. I'm listening to the whole of Ruby Lane this morning, and I'm just letting it overtake me with quiet times before the construction actually started. It just affected me so much because what you do beyond anyone that I know, for real, you are able to paint this canvas with that guitar. You lead from one adventure to another within the same song. It's as if you are pulling us gently with this magic thread to various parts of the world to let us see places that we've never seen. And then after we're through, we're changed. It's beautiful.
Well, that's a beautiful way to put it, and certainly what I'm going for. You know, it's you get so close to these things that sometimes by the end of a project, I'm not so much doubtful, but I to the limit, and I'm still not enough. You know? So it makes me feel really good to hear that, because that sense of journey and discovery are what I'm trying to share. You know, I'm going through it too, but it's sometimes you get so close to it that it's a little bit difficult to realize or to know whether or not you've been successful. I feel like all you can do is your best, you know, and but it's very gratifying. And to hear the wonderful way that you put it, I mean, I've been working on a podcast which I'm going to release on the day the album is released on April 15th, and trying to describe the music and while it plays in the background, it's quite a challenge for me. I wish I was as eloquent as you are, because I could use more of those wonderful ways of describing the music. Although maybe coming out of my mouth, they wouldn't sound so eloquent. I'm not sure, but thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, Ken, it's honest to goodness a pleasure, and you say that you do your best, But you have to have the inspiration in order to feel as if you're doing your best. This is a whole length and breadth of inspiration on Ruby Lane. Each of these songs carries a magnitude of possibilities and personal meaning for you. But in the meantime, while you're getting inspired and you're creating these works of art, it just transfers to us, and they become personal too. I don't know, and again, I'll probably say this a fourth time during this show, I'm not sure how you do that, about how you can make what's personal for you personal for us. But that's the beauty of Ken Navarro.
Well, I you know, with this album, it was the challenge was to for that, what you're talking about, that feeling, which really is the only way I could put it. It's more of a feeling. It's hard to put it into words, but to take those feelings and have it be what tied what otherwise could be some pretty diverse songs that wouldn't necessarily seem like they could all fit on the same record. Because I, you know, when I look back over the last four records that I've done since like 2006, I guess, wow, that's 8 years. Oof.
Wow.
But when I look back at those four records, I see that I've really made quite a transformation and gone through a lot of places, because I've done things that are certainly, you know, real groove-oriented, smooth contemporary jazz. I've done these what I think of as story songs, you know, these journeys, these long through-composed pieces that start one place and end up someplace completely different while they're taking you through, hopefully taking you through this experience to get from the beginning to the end. And then in 2012, I did the solo guitar record where the entire record was just one guitar playing all of the parts. And so trying to find a way, you know, my challenge was, am I going to go in a new direction, or am I going to take one of these directions and try to focus on it? And in the end, I realized that it was time to unify it all and to try to find a way to do all of that on one record, the smooth grooves, the long composed journey pieces, and to take the solo guitar thing to a new, hopefully to a new height, to keep exploring all of that. But then the challenge is, how do those all fit on an album so it doesn't sound like a, you know, one of these and one of those and one of those, you know, one from column A, one from column B, one from column C. And what I realized was that the way that was going to work was if I could somehow get that spirit, that emotion that is what's so important to me about music, just every song had to have that in common. And I think that's what holds it together and makes it so that you don't really think about the fact that you just went from a song with, you know, 15 different instruments to a song with just two, or just a song with just one, like my cover of Stevie Wonder's Higher Ground, you know. You know, so that's what I think makes that work. And I know that's, for me as a listener, I mean, that's what makes music that I truly love last and work for me, is when somehow that person, you feel like that person's really, really believes in what it is they're doing, and that spirit of that conveys, and once you tap into that, it's like you are living through that person's music. And so I hope to some degree I've been successful doing that too with Ruby Lane.
Well, here's something else about you that I've noticed through the years. I know that you are constantly engaging either current fans or new fans in the process of your recording, and that's so wonderful. And then you're able to keep the technical part of even the communication about what's happening separate mm-hmm. from the creativity behind the scenes.
It's tricky.
It's
tricky sometimes. Yeah, because it's like two completely different hats. And,
yes.
You know, there's a part of me that wants to just be the musician. But then there's another part of me that loves the fact that people can reach out and touch me and I can do the same. And especially when I'm in the process of the recording, which can take many months, you get really isolated. You know, I was kind of alluding to that before. You know, you're not sure if it's really coming out the way that you think it's coming out. And being in touch with people and having them be back in touch with you via, you know, all kinds of social media and emails, and it's really good for me. You know, it helps remind me that even though I feel kind of alone, that there are people waiting to see what I'm going to do next. And that's a good thing, you know, because it can sometimes feel like you're doing it in a vacuum, and it's a very positive influence to open yourself up to that.
You always are going to go back. You're just so truthful about what you do. You have to, because you're Ken Navarro, go back to a classical place and a soulful place at the same time with your music. You're very vision-like. You're very dreamy. I know that you were born in June, and that makes you a Gemini, but there's a lot of you that's a Pisces and an Aquarius, because you're just one of these honest-to-goodness, Ken, these tried-and-true hippies that believes in the goodness of everyone.
Right, it's true. I really do. I remember, you know, my dad, who was not particularly emotive, as men of his generation were not wont to be.
Right.
But I remember one time him saying to me, it was probably around the time I was going to go off to college in Wisconsin, and he wasn't a big one for giving me a big pieces of advice or, you know, preaching about anything really. But he said, you know, just remember, most people are good. And I was really moved by that, because especially coming from somebody who didn't say things like that, I thought, wow, if he feels that way, then my instincts are right, you know, not this feeling. You know, sometimes I hear about fathers in particular who try to teach their kids not to trust anybody, you know, that sort of a thing where they say jump and I'll catch you, and then they don't catch you. I think,
yes.
Oh, my God, what a terrible lesson to learn, you know. And so I feel like I learned the opposite lesson, you know, in spite of the harsh realities that we all face in life, you know, I hold on to that, and I see and I believe it, and that's what I, you know, I think infuses the music, you know, on a secondary level, but I think that's always there.
Oh, yeah, and for me, today, this particular day, I was hearing When the Spirit Speaks, and I just, it was a very quiet house, and I let myself get swept away by that, because that song is a surprise. And
yeah, it is. It's not, you know, I mean, it's probably the biggest departure I've ever taken, and I've taken quite a few. But yeah, having a piece that basically features a string quartet on what is, you know, marketed anyway as a smooth jazz record is not, I don't know if anybody's done anything like that. And, you know, not that it's the listener's problem, but, it took a lot of work to be able to learn to write a string quartet that I thought was as good as the things that made me want to write music for a string quartet. I have a notebook about 5 inches thick of notes that I took while I studied all these different string quartets over the past 3 years until I felt ready to try to write something like that for myself. And of course, what I wanted to write was a string quartet with my guitars as the feature. Yet, you know, the piece starts off with, I think, a full minute or so of just the string quartet before my guitar enters. And and then it goes on all these journeys. So it's not just a simple, here's a, you know, it goes through a number of different changes, and gets quite exciting and driving not like your you know, not like a Beethoven string quartet exciting, but in a very contemporary, jazz-oriented way, where I'm soloing over the string quartet. You know, I'm actually playing an improvised jazz solo over the string quartet. So, it was a real challenge. And like I say, that's not the listeners, you know, that's not their problem. That's mine to make it so that work is invisible. And that's the thing I'm probably proudest about with that, is that you don't, I don't think the listener hears that and goes, wow, this must have taken a lot of work. I think they just hopefully get swept away with it and experience my musical spirit through a whole new medium, meaning, you know, using strings and the guitar together that way.
It's a whole new kind of fusion, actually. This morning I was trying to think, because I knew that you were going to be on the show, I was trying to think of what I could use as terminology for what you do in particular. And to me, because you're so, and this is tricky too, if you are both intelligent as a musician and you have passion and feeling. Sometimes mm-hmm. you're either one or the other, but when you have both and they're balanced and there's a sense of serenity in the music, that's very special. So what I would say to someone who is not acquainted with you, I would say Ken Navarro is the best at conveying a narrative jazz. The storytelling you are a storyteller. You just can't help yourself, can you?
No, I can't. You're right. And it seems like that's the area that more and more, you know, I feel serves everything else. You know, are you carrying the listener off into that experience, just like a good book? You know, we all know what it's like when you get into a good book. You don't want to put it down. It's just you want to read it without stopping. Or you wake up in the morning and the first thing you want to do is pick that book up and you know, get back into that world. And so,
yes.
You know, I really believe in that, you know, and I believe in the power of music to do that in a way where you're actually kind of, as a listener, I mean, you're actually kind of writing your own story based on what you're hearing. It's the beauty of jazz and the beauty of music that doesn't have lyrics. There's wonderful, wonderful things about lyrics. Believe me, I miss it sometimes. But at the same time, I recognize that those lyrics tend to put limits sometimes on your imagination, where the music lets you, you know, come up with a completely different story than somebody else, or that the musician might have even been thinking of. It doesn't matter. They're all good. And that's very powerful. And so, you know, I think that's the thing that narrative storytelling music does that no other music really can touch.
You know, there is a real, gosh, it's a whole another show, actually, to talk about the differentiation between the communication with instrumental music and then the mm-hmm. vocalization of that communication.
Right.
I'm really strong about playing two instrumentals, usually followed by one vocal, because mm-hmm. the vocal embellishes possibly what has come before. So you're letting people drift on this journey, and then to sum it all up, here's a vocal. And sometimes when you punch a particular, I always think as a person who is, for lack of a better word, a disc jockey, you paint this time for someone. Maybe somebody is at lunch. Maybe somebody has a few minutes where they're trying to get their head right. If you have a few songs and there are instrumentals and you're able to let them go to Paris or South Africa or Jenkintown, PA, or Ellicott City, Maryland, wherever you want to go, it's there. And then you have a vocal to sort of set it. It just, mm-hmm. it means everything to somebody's ear. Those instrumental songs can, when you are an artist the way you are and able to take somebody, here's an example. You have a song on Ruby Lane called Westbound and Rolling.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the inspiration for that is, but now it's my song because my son and I are going to move to Florida this year.
Oh, wow. Oh, I didn't know that. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. His dad has just moved. There's no sense in making my son and his dad be apart, so I'll find my way. But we're going to move to the west coast of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So here's your song, Westbound and Rolling, and
yeah,
go, got it.
Yeah, no, exactly. And for me, that that piece is inspired by many different things. But I, as usual, I name these things after they're completely written, sometimes after they're completely recorded. But it was just so obvious to me that that song had a traveling quality to it.
Yes.
And not just traveling like you know, aimlessly or slowly with a purpose. And so, you know, that was why the rolling, you know, the feeling that we're moving, you know, we're going 60 at least, you know. And that's that the whole piece is like that. You know, it begins and ends on that feeling. And in the middle, it goes into these whole other places. But that's exactly what I'm talking about, where it's great. It really pleases me that you can so easily adapt that as your own, because it's, you know, it's wide open for you to put your story in there.
See, that's the cool thing. And you have something. This is a very unusual line of conversation, but you get it because you feel that too. You have a real love for trains, as I do. And often when I hear your songs, I hear trains rolling in the distance,
mm-hmm.
Which is a big comfort.
Yeah, there's something, exactly, comfort. There's something soothing about the idea of train travel.
Yes.
I don't know what it is, you know. There's something cozy about it, and romantic. And part of it, I'm sure, is that it harks back to our, you know, another time. I've looking train trips, you know. It's expensive now to take one of those train trips. They know that people have that connection to it, and you know, I'd love to do it, but I'm going to have to save up a lot of money. It looks like from every time I look at it, I think, oh, let's do a train vacation. Cause I have a couple people on Facebook who, because of the album Dreaming of Trains, they, you know, they say, I've done this train trip and you should do it, you know, and I look it up and go, what? How many thousands of dollars? You know, I'm amazed, you know, but it's obviously a specialty thing and expensive. But I relate to that. Even taking the Amtrak to New York brings back a little bit of that feeling, you know, traveling in an Amtrak car, which isn't the same thing, but it's still something like it, you know. But yeah, I like cozy is a word I always think of, you know.
And also exciting, because here's something else about what you're able to convey with your music. Somebody's listening and they're thinking to themselves, I'm going to go somewhere. I'm not sure where I'm going to go, but Ken's going to take me. He's the driver. And
I hope so. Yeah, well, that's great to hear that, and it just, you know, pieces like When the Spirit Speaks and Westbound and Rolling, you know, these are challenging pieces, I think, for the listener potentially, because they're not necessarily using the common touchstones that the jazz and the smooth jazz audience are used to.
Right.
So, you know, with for example, with Westbound and Rolling, one of the things that interested me about writing that was I wanted to see if I could write a piece that was like, I forget how long that is, 4 or 5 minutes, that holds your attention and takes you on that journey, but it does not contain one note of a melody that's like singing above everything. There isn't one place in the entire piece that is about a guitar or some instrument singing above it all. And instead, it's a whole lot of melodies that come together like a collage or like a kaleidoscope, and swirl around and create a sense of excitement and purpose just that way, with rhythm and harmony, but melody kind of redefined, not as a melody that's above everything that is kind of like a singer, but all these pieces playing melodies all at once. And while that might sound chaotic to somebody who hasn't heard it, when you hear it, it's, you know, you know you're in good hands. At least I think you'll know you're in good hands, and that everything is very, very focused. I know it took me a long time to write that one because there was every note had to be right, even though you don't necessarily, the listener doesn't necessarily hear each individual part. If one part of the 11 different guitars that are in that steps out of line or gets too individualistic, then the whole thing sounds like suddenly this fine balance isn't quite right, you know?
Mm.
So anyway, hard to explain these things, yeah. But yeah, I'm sorry, what were you going to say, Trish?
No, that's the thing. And we've talked about this before, the balance, something that you are adamant about, and it may not be conscious all the time. I think it just naturally happens to you because your ear is so good. Matter of fact, this is something new that just popped up. You know, Ken, if you were working in the 60s, if you were this kind of artist and working in the 60s when all that creativity was happening in different pockets mm-hmm. of the country, you would be as well loved then as you are now, because you are able to layer and texture sound in such a way that people who were, I'm just going to say it, experimenting with different kinds of things, you actually create these trips in a way that people who were very in tune to themselves were able to do back then.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be why some of us of a certain age who love the music, and even my son, who's 22, he loves that music, and we've talked about why. It's because of these flavors and colors and sounds that are not simplistic, but when you pull them all together, they seem to be so.
Yeah, exactly. It always should come across like that it's effortless. So that's kind of what I was getting at when I was saying it's not the audience's problem. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's not the listeners. You know, they expect you to do whatever the work is that's necessary. And yeah, it should seem simple. If it doesn't, then kind of like looking at a painting that you can respect what it must have taken to do it, but you don't really want to look at it for very long. You know, I don't think that's successful, you know. So because I know that I myself, you know, there's certain things that that musically that I'll hear other people do. And as a musician, I know what it took to be able to accomplish what they did, but I hear it one time and that's kind of enough, you know, because it's not doing it for me, you know. It's not transparent and it's not I can't get to the heart, you know, and the heart and the spirit of it are really that's the meat for me. You know, it should be simple, and in the end, and hopefully at the same time, you know, have some real depth, so that as you listen over and over again, you keep hearing new things. I think that's another area that I'm a real, you know, definitely going back to the 60s, I'm a real headphone guy. You know, I still love putting on a pair of headphones and listening to a record that I think I know really well. And then I listen with headphones and I go, whoa, you know, I'm amazed at things that I didn't pick up. And I'm pretty tuned into that stuff. You know, that's growing up in the 60s, definitely. I'm so glad that happened to me as a musician, because I just got not only influenced, you know, in so many different ways all at the same time, but maybe even more important, it made me a dreamer when it comes to music, that, you know, shoot for the moon, because that's what people were doing back then all the time.
Oh, yes. Oh, gosh. Hey, it's a blessing to have been a listener. I'm not a musician, but in listening to different kinds of sounds now, you know, hear something. The ACM Awards were on the other night, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, it made me ache for what was great in country music about 15, 20 years ago. You know,
mm-hmm.
these cats and kitties are all technically perfect, but you know, it's back to that painting, as you say. You look at the painting, if it doesn't engage you, if there's not something that is a connection for you, you want to look at it once and then move along to look at something else.
Yeah, yeah, it really does come down to that. And, of course, these things are subjective, but the objective part of it, though, is that you can tell when an artist, whether they're, you know, writing or drawing or composing, I think you can tell when their primary goal is to convey some deeply felt feeling as opposed to conveying a deeply earned skill, if you know what I mean. We all want the skill, and I watched some of that awards show too, and it's always so ironic when a Merle Haggard is honored, because his music was so full of the grease and the grit and the humanity that is what makes the best country any music, but the best country music, and that's the element that seems to be lacking to some degree in this real modernized slick version of you know, I have a friend who calls it cowboy hat music. Everybody wears a cowboy hat. And I like country stuff, believe me. I mean, you know, all through college, I played in a bluegrass band, and I'm really glad for that experience because music is music. You know, there's good, like Miles said, Duke Ellington said, there's just two kinds of good music and bad music. You know, it's not about style, it's about substance. And, I kind of had a similar feeling watching the show. You know, it's incredibly well done and well produced and well everything, you know, but I almost wished for that to get some of that grease and grit, you know, that the best country music has in common with the best funk music. Same thing. I don't want to hear music played so perfectly. That's just not it. You know, I remember, I don't know if you happened to see the movie about all the Motown musicians who played all those records. Yes,
absolutely.
Standing in the Shadows of Motown. Well, you know, on the extras disc, they have all these clips of just like where they isolated just the drums and the bass player. And unlike so much music now where the drums and the bass are like perfect, like everything is so exactly lined up, you know, electronically, you can hear where the bass and the drums are together, but not exactly right, and it makes for a bigger pocket and a bigger groove because they're not exactly right. There's something, some X factor in there that makes the rhythm much more exciting. You know, it just kind of taught me a lesson that, you know, that's better. You know, not the perfection. You know, the perfection is definitely overrated. And in my experience, you know, being on the recording side of it, is that the listener is not listening for that. They really aren't. They're listening for that human thing, you know, that creates that emotional experience and creates something that sounds like only people together collaborating could do that. Yeah,
so. That is right. Oh my gosh, you hit it. And I'm going to play Ruby Lane in just a minute, and I want you to tell me what that means. One of the technical aspects that I was explaining at the beginning of the show was, for the first time, I have Ruby Lane ready to go, and other songs were not being recorded on the Blog Talk Radio system. So here's what I'll do. I'll say this to you ahead of time, Ken. I'm going to play this song. If we can't get the others, that's cool. I'll just play them somewhere in the show. Probably they'll kick in after you're gone.
Right. That's how it always works. I know.
Right. Well, here's something else about you. And you were able to say this in such a way, and I'll say it in a different way. When some people record, there are some really worthy musicians out there, in particular jazz musicians, but they are mired in some sort of debris where they feel compelled to give the same kind of product in and out of their work year after year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily that they're thinking of the consumer, of their fans. They just want to make sure that the money flows in. They're afraid that if they deviate from that formula, as it were, they are not going to be thought of as the musicians that have been held up on pedestals.
Whereas you
are thinking of a person's ear. You already know that people who are listening to you are smart. There are many who don't necessarily think of fans that way. You're thinking, how in a different way can I make sure that I bring somebody along with me? I don't want to leave anybody out. I want to be creative, but I want to make sure that someone feels at home with who I am at this level of my artistry. That's what you do.
Yeah, I think you have to trust that. I mean, I just know that anybody who decides to pursue an artistic life has to believe 100% in what they're doing for themselves in order, if they really are going to, you know, have that go over with everybody else. My old analogy is comparing it to a comedian who tries to tell a joke that he or she doesn't really believe in. And when they tell that joke to the audience can sense that they don't completely believe in it, and it doesn't work. I don't know. You're right. I do trust the audience, and I feel like, you know, I'm going to present to them what the best I can, and they'll either go along with it or they won't. And I I'm not judgmental about people who, you know, want to hear more of this or more of that, because I cover so many different kinds of things that there are going to be people who want me to do basically another version of something else they already like of mine. But and I'm not saying that I don't, you know, the song you're going to play, Ruby Lane, is the most smooth jazz thing I've written and recorded in probably 8 or 9 years. And it's being received at radio really well, and people really like it, and I really like it. That's why it's on the record, because I really like it. It's a joke I think is really funny, you know, if I was a comedian. It's a piece that I feel really, you know, works. The fact that it would be called, quote-unquote, smooth jazz, down-the-middle smooth jazz, is fine with me, because I obviously, there's a part of me that, for me to say, oh, that's what people like, I'm going to do 10 more of those on the next record. I wouldn't be able to sell that. You know what I'm saying? Because I wouldn't buy it. one of the things with the album Ruby Lane was, how do you take the song Ruby Lane and have that fit in with When the Spirit Speaks, you know, or Westbound and Rolling? How are those all going to fit? Or Higher Ground, done on solo guitar, how are those going to all fit together? But gosh, as artists, to be lucky enough to get to do what I do, it would be so unfair to myself and to the fan base that I've been able to develop over the years to relinquish, you know, that obligation and the joy of being an explorer and taking people on my next exploration with me. That's not to admit
that, right.
That doesn't sound too, you know, too full of myself. I don't mean it that way. It's just I honestly feel very blessed to get the opportunity, and I don't want to throw it away.
Well, you said it. You trust them, and those who love you should trust you, because the reason that people are so strong and so many in your fan base is because of the kind of music, not the similarity from one to another, but the exploration, you just said that, of who it's going to be this time. And we mentioned
right.
this at the beginning of the show. Ooh, I wonder what Ken's going to give us now. That's a big deal.
And I think there was a part of me that knew that, you know, putting the song Ruby Lane on the album, there would be a part of my people who've listened to me over the years who would go, oh, I love, that's what I've been wanting to hear more of that from Ken. You know, I'm aware of it, you know. I'm aware that certain songs that, you know, got a lot of radio airplay are songs that people, they really liked, you know. And I think part of, it took me a while to come back around to that place where I could find a way to include that part of me in with everything else that I want to do. And that's a sign of maturity, I think, even at this age where I'm still getting mature. I think in some ways, not writing anything like that for 8 or 9 years was just what I had to do, but it also meant that it was not a complete acceptance of everything that I am as a musician. And so anyway, it's cool that you're going to play that song, because I think that's sort of a centerpiece of the record.
And it means something to you. Ruby Lane is a title for a reason, isn't it, Ken?
Yeah, well, my wife Kristen and I celebrated our 40th wedding anniversary. Clap, 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 applause, applause. Whenever I say that on a show, I feel guilty because it's like an automatic button pusher to get people to clap. Like, you made it 40 years, oh, my God. Or somebody made
That's
it with
amazing.
You 40 years, oh, my God. But yeah, we celebrated our 40th wedding anniversary last December. And I found out that Ruby is the jewel for 40th anniversary. So I had this song kind of on the back burner. It wasn't finished. It just seemed like the perfect musical anniversary gift. That and a very, very nice pair of earrings.
Ruby earrings. Yes.
I'm not stupid, Trish. I know a song isn't going to do it.
Oh, thank God.
But that's hence this. And Lane, there's just something about the word Lane. You know, we were talking about that feeling with trains. There's just something, words, certain words. You know, with naming songs, it's the only place that I get to be lyrical. It's the only place I get to say something about what a song is about to me. And so Ruby Lane, I was just trying to describe this wonderful road that I've, again, been just blessed to be on. With Kristen, you know, for 40 years and counting.
Wow.
And the music I knew was, you know, was a love song, but it was great to be able to title of that and to have it come out, you know, right at the time of our, or, you know, be finished right at the time of our anniversary. So, yeah, that's what that is. Yeah.
Well, this song, seriously, is 5 minutes of love. Wait till you hear this from Ken Navarro, our guest today on Hybrid Jazz. Ruby Lane. Navarro. Beach is in the chat room from Southern California, and every once in a while she'll say something, and I know where she is exactly when she says this, but she had a special moment where she typed in, "Calgon, take me away."
Oh, wow. That's great.
No, this is absolutely, Ruby Lane is one of those perfect transition albums. It's this musical project that takes you from A to Z. Ruby Lane is honestly 5 minutes of love. I can feel the love when you're playing. And you know what else I heard at the end there? You actually did it. I heard a train go, doot, doot.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, you're right with the guitar. I know. That's funny. I heard that too. that must be subconscious.
Yes. Oh, but
well,
it's just
something
that
about
love.
The nylon string guitar, it's such a I don't know what it is about it. You know, I didn't grow up playing nylon string, you know, what they call classical guitar. You know, it's a softer string with a softer sound. I grew up playing steel strings and electric guitar and, you know, that kind of thing. I didn't pick up a nylon string guitar till I was in my late 20s. It wasn't that I never played one, but I was always oriented towards a brighter, louder sound. I don't know. It was like I found my voice. And when with a song like Ruby Lane, you just couldn't do that with anything but a nylon string guitar. So warm. It's like the difference between a gentle voice and a, you know, a whisper, a caressing sound versus something that's sort of pointing at you or poking you a little bit. It never pokes. It always sounds, you know, like it's caressing, and it's just perfect for that song. I haven't listened to it in a while. To be honest, it's difficult for me to listen to a new record very much after I finally
I know.
You know, I all I can think about is stuff that nobody else will ever hear, and I won't even hear it given enough time. but all I can think about is, oh, I wish I'd done that different. Oh,
gosh, I know.
It's very silly. It's very silly, and I know that after 21 albums. You know, I know that, but still, I haven't listened very much, but, you know, we're sitting listening on the phone. You know, that was the thing that I noticed. I went, boy, there's just no way to do that without a nylon string guitar. Have it sound like that kind of a voice.
And I liked it.
So thank you. You helped me to like something I did with only weeks after I finished it. So.
Oh, thank God for that. Because you really are. You really like to listen with an objective ear. But that melody is so perfect. And here's what else is in the way of your playing and the nylon string. There's a certain kind of hopefulness conveyed with a nylon string in regard to a melody at that pace. Mm-hmm. You've paved the way for telling a story. You definitely know that there's romance involved in this, but there's a hopefulness, an expectation that's positive that's coming up. That's what I
think. Yeah. I think that's what music is to me, I think, it's that hopefulness. You really have a good way of putting into words what I find difficult to put into words. There's that essence of always hoping that around the other, you know, around the corner is going to be something better. And because, you know, we all know there are a lot of struggles that we all have in life. And, you know, if you don't have that optimism and that sense of, like, you know, the things are always just a step away from turning around in your favor. I don't know what you don't have anything. You know, I used to love to watch. Remember, you know, not sure I've forgotten, but I lived in L.A. in the '80s during the heyday of the Lakers and Magic Johnson. And I used to love to watch Magic Johnson play basketball because this might sound a little odd, but I got that same sense of hopefulness from watching him play basketball, the joy of it, you know?
Interesting.
And, you know, it just came through his being. It just came through. And it doesn't surprise me one bit that he's been so successful after basketball, successful on so many levels that have nothing to do with basketball, because he's got that thing, you know, where he's always looking forward and always optimistic no matter what gets thrown in his way. So, you know, it's a great characteristic. I think I look for it everywhere because we all need it, you know.
Oh, we do. And, you know, some of us actually feel as though we are so positive that it's up to us to pull others who aren't as along. Come on, We
yep.
got to coax a little bit harder, because some people just cannot pull themselves out of circumstances. Not that yours can, or mine, or other people who are positive, not that our situation is perfect, but for whatever reason, we just have the extra measure of believing that everything will work out.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what it is. It's. I don't know if it's in background, you know, if it's in the genes, I really don't know. But I try to be, you know, this is the thing that's kind of interesting to wearing the two hats I wear. One, you know, the musician, composer, and that side of it. And then the other side, which I'm very in the middle of now, which is trying to get the word out about it, trying to make sure radio's playing it, trying to make sure it's available in all the places it should be and all that stuff. You know, it's easy for that hat to make you get pessimistic, but it's like anything in life. You really have to make a concerted effort to say, when you know, and you wake up in the morning, today's going to be a good day. You know, you just have to decide it's going to be a good day. It really is as simple as that.
It's a decision.
I mean, it's
going to
be a good day, but you just have to. You know, I look at it, you don't really have any other choice. You know, given the two choices, that's the only one to take. And in the end, I think from that, and at the very least, you know, it's nice to be a kind of person that other people want to be around, because they get some of that from you. And I know that I look for people like that too, you know, to give me that inspiration. I think that's part of what, you know, leaving myself open to people responding to my music when I'm in the middle of working on a project is, like I was saying earlier in our conversation, that's I've used that to my advantage more often than not.
Oh, I see. It's the ultimate goader. If you get validation, honestly, if you continually to get those spark plugs of validation, it persuades you to think, you know what?
Maybe this
I'm
isn't terrible what I'm working on.
Yeah.
No, it does. It's absolutely true. And I mean, we all need that. But in the end, you know, we have to give it to ourselves, I think. And it's believe me, I'm probably sounding like this ultimate optimist, and it's a struggle for me too. I don't really know too many people it isn't a struggle for, but you have to choose. You know, are you going to meet it head first with a positive attitude, or are you going to just kind of make a halfway effort with a you know, a pessimistic attitude? And there's no choice there. That's an easy choice, but it's not an emotionally easy choice, I think. And sometimes I know people, they fall into the pessimistic side because they get defeated one too many times. But I don't know. You never know when things are about to turn a corner. And they come sometimes not directly from things I'm working at, but it's almost like karma. You know, you feel like because you're doing things right, suddenly this good thing happens you weren't even trying to make happen. It wasn't the good thing you were trying to make happen, but that's a better thing. And sometimes I feel like, well, that wouldn't have happened if I wasn't out there, you know, positively shaking things up, you know. So that's
you are right. When your heart is good, things do happen. And conversely, that's true too. If you don't have good motivations, then things will multiply themselves in a negative way. But you were saying, not to sound like the eternal optimist, we all need the help in order to feel good so that we can be persuaded to make the decision that it's going to be a good day. And how do we get to that point? One of the ways is music. And that's why I'm telling everybody, Ruby Lane, you put that on in the morning, no matter what kind of day you're going to have. If it's good, it's going to be better. If it's bad, it's going to be good.
That's nice. Well,
I mean that
would be the greatest accomplishment for me if whenever my music does that. And those are the kinds of emails and Facebook messages I get that absolutely just make me drive me forward. Definitely, you know, people say something like that, you just realize, wow, I don't even know about it, and this is happening here and there, and it could be in Japan, it could be some far off place. That's you know, that if that doesn't inspire a musician, I don't know what does. But yeah, you know, if my music can do that, then it's really accomplished something.
See, here's the power of instrumental music again. You have fans in Japan, you have them in France, you have them in the UK, in different parts of continents, South America, Africa. And why? Because when anyone hears a song that's by Ken Navarro, there are no words, so anyone can fill in their own blanks and paint their own canvas because you've given them a brush. There.
Yeah, well, that's great. I hope so. I wanted to mention, too, since we weren't able to share as much of the music as I know you were hoping to, that there, I do have, I don't even remember what I called it now, but on YouTube there's a 10-minute video preview of every song on the album, including, personal reflections on each song.
Great.
So I just invite people, they can listen to that and learn a little bit about, hear the music, but learn a little bit something about what I was doing with it, too. And it's on YouTube. It's just called, Ruby Lane, I think. I can't remember what I called it. But one of the many ways I've been trying to get the word out about the new record.
Well, that's great. Thank you for mentioning that. And I'll post that on my page. And
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Try to figure out what's going on, that all the other music was fine, and I got Ruby Lane, but not the other two or three that I wanted to play. But don't worry about it, Ken.
We had a good time.
Oh, we sure did.
We covered a lot of stuff, and that's just as important.
It really is, and this is one of those works, honestly, that's going to get continual play, because once yours truly gravitates to something that is monumental like this, I love all of this music, Ken.
Thanks, Trish. That's great.
Oh, gosh. How rare is it to love every track on here? Kings and Queens is another piece of work. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that was a special one because and I hope you can relate to this, that was dedicated to all the single moms who bring up kids virtually on their own. I was inspired by thinking about Ethel Kennedy, who raised 9 children on her own, and then I start thinking about, Coretta Scott King, who basically raised 4 children on her own, and I just thought somebody needs to write something to commemorate that. And it was an extension of the solo guitar thing, because I bought this pedal called a boomerang that allowed me to layer parts on top of parts so I could be many solo guitarists. And that's how that was recorded. And it's sort of analogous to, for me, when I play it live, and I played it live for a whole year before I recorded, that's very unusual. I usually don't do it that way. I usually record it, then I play it live. But this was the other way around. So it was definitely road tested by the time I recorded it. And what it's analogous to is when I play it live, an artist with just a big blank canvas and then making a painting right then and there. You can't go back. You can't erase anything. You have to work with it. And that's what the boomerang allows me to write a composition on the spot with multiple different parts that come and go. And that's what Kings and Queens was musically, but it was inspired by the story of Ethel Kennedy and Coretta Scott King and dedicated to all the single moms, that do a job that I don't know how either Kristen or I could have done separately. It was hard enough to do it well together. So it seemed like it was time for somebody to write a piece like that. So, yeah, that's what Kings and Queens is. And those are the kinds of things on the YouTube video that I took some time to delve into as the music plays, too. So
that's so beautiful. Ken, your heart is just so good. This is why I love talking to you. I can't believe that an hour has gone by.
It's great. Well, we always have a great – it's always easy, and I always look forward to doing, when a new album comes out, to getting together with you and Hybrid Jazz and doing this, because you do an interview like no one else, and it's fun for me to have it be personal, you know, and not just the usual stuff. And I do a lot of interviews, and most of them people nowadays, it's changed a lot, you know, people stretch out like this, which is good, but you know, you can always tell when someone's basically reading your bio and asking questions, you know, and that's
yes.
Nothing like what you do, which is fantastic. So keep up the good work.
You.
And I hope you're going to keep doing it, whether you're in Florida or whether you're closer by.
Oh, you better believe it. Hey, look, we're going to change the face of Florida, honey. So you get on that train, you and Kristen, and you make that trek to Southwest Florida.
Right. That is,
yes.
You're right. That is a train trip. That really is. Maybe we can afford that distance. Well, I know we can handle the Amtrak. It's those luxury liners that, it ain't gonna happen, but
your wealthy friends, they're traveling all over the world. You know, we're just Maryland people here.
I know, exactly. That's exactly. Well, thanks again for doing this, Trish. I really appreciate it.
Oh, Ken, thank you for the time. I really appreciate you. And anything that you have is on your Facebook in the way of information and kennavarro.com. And if people want to buy, that's where to buy, and please do. Ruby Lane is going to be an important piece of music for anybody who's listening right now.
Yeah,
really.
Well, it won't. It doesn't come out worldwide, you know, on all the internet sites and the retail stores till a week from today. But
yes.
It is available on my website, the CD and the download. And the nice thing when people go to my website is, you know, if they buy a CD, I can't obviously do it with a download. But if they buy a CD, I sign it to them and. You can be sure
awesome.
I address the envelope and the whole thing.
cool.
But yeah. But if you know, we're it's been nice to see so many pre-orders at Amazon and iTunes, and you know, people believing in it before they've even heard it. That's one of the nice things about sticking around and doing this over the course of 21 albums. You know, you develop a fan base that actually trusts you. So that's been nice to see. But I just want to let people know they could get it directly from the website, too.
Well, I that's so awesome. And again, there's that word trust. It's a big deal
mm-hmm.
for you, and you are really one of the most trusted artists that I know, just because people know your heart and know the depth of music inside of you. I'm not even, you know, the smooth thing. We could get into a discussion about it. We won't do that. I like to call what you do modern jazz because
mm-hmm.
it's got intelligence, heart, soul, creativity, all of it, and it's set in 2014. Beautiful.
Yeah, that's nice. Well, thank you. Thank you for all the nice things you said, Trish, and for getting what I'm doing. And I, you know, they are heart, believe me, it's a heartfelt appreciation to hear those things. And I'm not sure I deserve them all, but I love hearing them nonetheless. Thank you.
Yes, you do deserve everyone. And you're going to get more. You're going to do more interviews. So enjoy every single one of them, Ken.
Thanks, Trish. Well, have a good rest of the show, and I'll be listening. If the music, you can get the music on, great, but don't worry about it. It's fine.
Well, I'm going to keep trying for the rest of the show.
Know,
I don't know what is going on.
I know you will, but I don't want you to sweat over it too much. But anyway,
well,
all right, Trish. Well, I'll talk to you again soon, I hope.
Yes. Oh, please. Let's make that happen, Ken. All right. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye, Trish.
Bye-bye. Ken Navarro right there. And again, let me tell you what happened. This is one of those scenarios, first time, that usually it's no hassle when the music is being recorded and then entered into the programming for the show. And Ruby Lane took The others, which sound beautiful when I play them back, but they were not being added into the system. So we're going to try through the course of the show. We've got another, couple of hours or so. Love Ken Navarro with all my heart. I was going to play a track from Ken and then follow it with this because it was this jazz legend's birthday yesterday. No longer with us, but his music lives on forever. Freddie Hubbard, All or Nothing at All on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Thank you. Robert Glasper. Hey, man, it's your boy Wayne Brady. Hey, I'm still trying to get on the record, brother. Hey, so I'm thinking either I'll sing something, you know, like I'll sing something like Erykah Badu did on the last one, be like, see that play, 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 see that play, key change, see that play, okay, no? Or I'll give you some gangster shit. Check it, the freestyle. Folks don't know about Wayne Brady. Born and raised right on Crenshaw. Big 6 foot tall chocolate dude running around nothing but his drawers, breaking the law. Over there making it bass notes like Lou Rawls. Just tink tank, what's that sound? That's the sound of my two click clacking balls as it bounce off the walls and it echoes down the halls. Look at me running over there buying everything up in the malls. And I just bought 3 ponies and put them right in the stall. After that was finished, I went to the Taj Mahal. Ring, ring, that's my cell phone. I think I just got a call. Oh, you know, I'm going to stop because that boy's too hot. The boy's too hot. Who else can do that for you? Who else is going to give you their real gangster shit? Robert. Tell me that.
Oh, my God. Yes, Wayne Brady at the end of the Norah Jones song on Robert Glasper Experiment's Black Radio 2. What can I say? There was a lot going on there, wasn't there? Oh, my God. He is a trip. Oh, if he's like that in real life, man, somebody needs a Valium. Yeah, Norah Jones. On this particular project, it kind of took me by surprise to see Norah on this for a multitude of reasons. But that aside, Gitali, which is actually her real name, did such a cool vibe on that song called Let It Ride. Just one of those 7-minute kinds of songs that, like Ken Navarro does instrumentally, takes you vocally on said ride. I don't know where we went, but it was pretty cool. And then there was Wayne. Norah's birthday was the 30th of March. She turned 35. And just so you know, I didn't know this until recently, Norah, when she first signed with Blue Note, how many years ago now? I think that Blue Note had in mind for her that she was going to be the second coming as far as vocal jazz was concerned. Norah had other ideas. She wanted to expand her horizons a whole lot, and now she is doing a country music project. She's calling it Puss in Boots. With two other gals, Sasha Bobson, who is decidedly from a jazz background, and also Catherine Popper, who plays bass, who was in Grace Potter and the Nocturnes, the group that everybody who is, say, under the age of 35 really does appreciate. I appreciated her, too. She was on a cool 4th of July Philadelphia fireworks show that was on last year, and, man, she really made an impression in Philadelphia. If you can do it in my city, you can do it anywhere. But here is Catherine and Sasha and Norah doing some dates as Puss in Boots. So that's going to be some real interesting female energy up on that stage. I'm not sure how much they delve into older country or is it modern, maybe a combination of the two. But Norah and Robert Glasper were a formidable combination there, weren't they? Love it. We heard, too, Freddie Hubbard from Open Sesame from 1960. Freddie was 22 at the time. Oh, Tina Brooks on tenor sax, McCoy Tyner on piano, Sam Jones on bass, Clifford Jarvis on drums. Song written by Arthur Altman and Jack Lawrence. There's a story that Frank Sinatra has about that song. It was written in 1939, and Sinatra recorded it a few times, but he did a particular take with Harry James, and I believe, as the story goes, that they were in this club in Los Angeles. It was the Victor Hugo Cafe. This was when Frank was just starting out. And the manager comes running over to Harry and Frank saying, hey, that's too loud. And you know what? You guys can't fill this joint up. You have no voice, he says to Sinatra. And you can't play, he says to Harry James. So they took their business elsewhere, and you know the rest of that story, but it's just so funny because that song, All or Nothing at All, was the first number one song that Frank Sinatra had. Beautiful. Love it when there's justice in the world. Freddie Hubbard's birthday was yesterday, born April the 7th, 1938. Left us on the 29th of December, 2008. My God, is this man beloved. NEA Jazz Master. And one of those cats who really was a one-to-one connection with a lot of people and made sure that people who really deserve the attention or things that deserve the attention got it. For example, Jazz Foundation of America, which is a wonderful organization who takes care of jazz and blues artists if they get in trouble. Freddie at one point had a heart condition, was not able to make the mortgage on his house. The Jazz Foundation of America took care of that for him and was able to keep his house. So anything that we can say or do to promote that agency will do it. Got a great website. I think it's jazzfoundation.org. But Freddie Hubbard was all about the love, so had to make sure we passed along that it was his birthday yesterday and how much he loved that foundation. My gosh. If we could play Freddie Hubbard music all the time, I got to hold myself back because he's one of the greatest trumpeters that ever lived. And to be doing that kind of strong stuff at the age of 22, that was his debut on Blue Note. Phew! Let us turn our attention to more music, shall we? Let's do a three-song set here. We're going to start it off with Kirk Whalum, who I understand from friends tore up the joint at Burke's Jazz the other day with Gospel According to Jazz, Take 4. This is going back to 2010. From Everything is Everything, the music of Donny Hathaway, a song for you on Hyper Jazz. To do it, had to play it, got to hear Michael McDonald's voice pretty frequently in this house, just cause, especially when you go back to 1978 and figure that that particular musical project launched 1,000 ships, did it not? Minute by Minute, the name of the song with the Doobie Brothers, and also the 8th album that includes What a Fool Believes. Oh, mercy. Oh, there's a whole nother story to that particular song, but the album is just full of really good vibrations. And Mike is kicking it. Had to go to his website a little while ago and saw what was going on with him. He is going to be at the Tampa Bay Blues Festival, St. Petersburg, this is, on the 12th. Along with Buddy Guy and Irma Thomas. Now that, ladies and gentlemen, is a blues festival. And the Blind Boys of Alabama are also on that bill. That is some crazy shiggity right there. Woo! Love to hear that. And then, yes, there will be a few Florida references now. He's going to be in Clearwater on the 19th of August with, get this, and it's not the only date, mind you, but Michael McDonald is touring with Toto. Yeah, so still so strongly entrenched in music on the contemporary scene today, bringing back memories from the past. And this particular album from 1978, oh my God, Herb Peterson, for those folks who have delved in and out of bluegrass and or country through the years on banjo back in the day. Norton Buffalo, how I remember that name from alternative country music sources, on harmonica. And the late and great Nicolette Larson on backing vocals. Oh, God, I could go on and on about that girl. Shoo! Miss her terribly. What a voice. We heard, too, from the Baltimore-based Greg Hatza and his organization from 1998, 20 years difference between that song you just heard and that middle song with Greg on the Hammond B3 organ. Woo! Also accompanying him, Paul Bolenbeck on guitar, Dennis Chambers on drums, and Ralph LaLana on tenor sax. Change the World is the name of the song that you heard by a trio of Nashville writers, by the way. And it's from Snake Eyes, from Greg and Company, one of those under-the-radar kinds of projects that you wouldn't necessarily hear unless you were listening to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. I'm just saying. Kirk Whalum to start the set from 2010, Everything is Everything, the music of Donny Hathaway. But let us tell you that A Song for You was written by the great Leon Russell, a favorite of absolutely thousands, that song. And a lot of people assume that Donny Hathaway wrote the song because he did a bang-up version of it. But for those of us who are aging hippies, we know that way back when, Leon had some sort of inspiration, don't know exactly what it was, but it does tear your heart out if you are not in the exact positive frame of mind in which to inhale the music. Whew, that is some heavy kind of lyrical power right there. You know who else did the song? If you saw the movie from the 80s, oh gosh, Willie Nelson and Diane Cannon in Honeysuckle Rose. Willie Nelson does a bang-up song, version of that song. Oh, gosh. That's another story entirely. Kirk Whalum just did the Berks Jazz Festival in Reading, Pennsylvania, on his way to the Blue Note in Tokyo. Then he will be at Pizza Express in the UK, and then the Cap Jazz Cruise later on this year. Full plate, as is the usual story for Kirk. KirkWhalum.com has the information. We want to say thank you again to Ken Navarro for being here for an hour. I wasn't sure, but when you have that kind of a good time with somebody, when you feel somebody so deeply, I feel Ken Navarro so deeply. I just love his music, and so many other people will say the same thing. Ruby Lane is amazing, honestly. Seamlessly interweaving different kinds of musical scenarios within one song and making it seem as if it's this long journey. I'm telling you, when T and I make that trek down the road to Florida, we will be playing Ruby Lane, whatever we're doing, in the train or probably in the car, trailing our stuff and our two cats in the back seat. We've got to have some traveling music, and that is it right there. Over and over, loop. T will be tearing his hair out. No, he won't. He will love hearing Ken Navarro because he so appreciates his guitar work. And when T appreciates you, that's a pretty big deal. Let us play Jerry Allen right now on keyboard. Beautiful work. Jerry Allen was all about paying homage to Mary Lou Williams back in 2011. So this is Trio 3 and Jerry Allen celebrating Mary Lou Williams live at the Birdland in New York. This is a song called, of course, some of us are partial to this astrological sign, Libra on Hybrid Jazz. This is Hybrid Jazz. Kind of song, isn't it? From 1958, and that was just about the time. There are some that would say that nobody could really tackle that song, Baltimore Oriole, like Carmen McRae, whose birthday is today. Sure wish she was around, man. Woo! What a voice, what a talent, what a lady! Born the 8th of April, 1920, born in Harlem, died in Beverly Hills. In 1994. Dad was from Costa Rica, mom from Jamaica. Early on in Carmen's career, teen actually, she was working at Minton's Playhouse in Harlem, where all the cats and kitties used to go. And she met a lot of folks in the industry, formed an early friendship with Billie Holiday that was so strong that Carmen hardly ever did a concert for her length of her career without doing at least a Billie Holiday song in that repertoire. Pretty solid stuff. And I did hear the other day, I have to share this, I didn't know, Carmen McRae was so mad when Diana Ross got the part of Billie Holiday in Lady Sings the Blues. Oh, my God, she was livid because she felt that Diana didn't have the right. Woo! Wonder what Diana said in response to that through the years when she heard that story, because you know she did. Diana knows everything. Man, awesome, awesome stuff there from Carmen's Birds of a Feather album, LP, I should say, back then. And it was all about birds, seriously. Bye-bye blackbird, etc. Everything was about birds. I'm not sure why the project came to be, but it was, and Carmen McRae could sing any of those songs. Especially, I listened to this on Spotify today, she does a sweet job on His Eye Is on the Sparrow. That's how she closes out the work. It's just choice. One of the best voices in jazz ever. Ray Gaskins, we heard, from 2009, our buddy, Baltimore-based. He's our little Baltimore Oriole. And sometimes he flies away because he's got to work with his sometimes boss, Roy Ayers, who Ray met, by the way, when Ray was working with Phyllis Hyman during her last two tours. So he and Roy became fast friends, and they've been working back and forth ever since. Now, I got to say that that was Herbie Hancock's Butterfly from Ray's A Night in the Life. Just talked to him the other day. This particular work includes Summertime. There's a few takes that Ray Gaskins has done on that song. One of them topped the UK charts in 1995. Ray was living in the United Kingdom at that time, so I thought that was pretty cool. And I think it's even cooler that Ray remains this humble guy with the successes that he's had through the years. He has had some challenges, I'm telling you. And I worry about him a little bit sometimes because he had a physical one a couple of years ago, but I think all is well now if he just continues to take care of himself. So, Ray, if you're listening, I'm going to have you back on the show, and we're going to talk about your health. That's it. From 2011, Trio 3, and Jerry Allen started that three-song set. Oliver Lake on alto sax, Reggie Workman on bass, Andrew Cyril on drums, the great Jerry Allen on piano from Celebrating Mary Lou Williams live at Birdland. That was a tune called Libra, yes. As part of Jazz Appreciation Month, Howard University, the Department of Music there, they have, and well, they had, and they're continuing to have this week, Jazz Week, and Jerry Allen was just at Howard University last night. Yeah, whenever she comes to the area, people stop and they salute because she is one of those formidable talents, not only in the way of artistry, but also an educator. Something special. So is Reagan Whiteside. Here she is with Marion Meadows from Evolve 2012. Until next time on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. gracious, that's nice, isn't it? Woo! You know, I actually have to still, and I get very, very sensitive about this because I always want to do right by anybody whose music I play. And this is a particular kind of pronunciation for this name. When you look at it, it's spelled S-I-B-O-N-G-H-I-L-E. So if you're going to assume that you know how to pronounce it, it would be maybe Sibongil, but no, it's Sibongile Kumalo from Johannesburg. Oh, my God, I love that song so much. From the 90s, from Ancient Evenings. That's a song called Untold Stories. Now, yours truly got to know that song because Putmeo Records has these amazing compilation discs. Some years ago, there was one that was all women of the world, varying places where jazz and folk and Caribbean and calypso and traditional stuff all melded into one. When I heard this woman's voice, oh, she just had me at hello, or whatever she says in the beginning of that song. Just beautiful. Has a music education. Her father was a professor. She is a singer, an educator, a cultural worker, and a social entrepreneur. So says her Twitter account. She also got her honorary doctorate, always in a position where she is being educated. She just loves it. She loves to share her music, deeply inspired by Miriam Makeba. And you can hear some elements of that. But there's just such joy that comes from that beautiful throat. And I really want to get into a position where maybe one weekend, and we're only going to do one hybrid jazz show this week, by the way, because it might get a little weird this year now that we're going to make this transition from Baltimore to Florida eventually, not next month, but eventually. So Mama Bear has to really take stock and make some plans. Tim, my son's dad, is in Punta Gorda now. He said that even with his minimal stuff, he had a heck of a job trying to put things together and pack them up to go. It was endless. So having all this stuff from Mom's house in Philadelphia here in our house in Baltimore, it's like having two households in one. So there's a lot of work. Bear with me. We're going to have some great shows, including, by the way, speaking of international flavors, a very special show that will be on April 30th, International Jazz Day. Guests are lining up, and what I have in mind is one show for that week as well. So it will be a Wednesday, and it will be 4 hours as opposed to three. The guests will be guests that you will not forget because you already know their names. So keep that in the back of your mind as we tell you about the second song that we heard in that set. Alex Snydman, who was on Hybrid Jazz last year. This is Fortunate Action, the name of the album from 2013. The track you heard was Wise Minds. Alex is amazing. This is his first CD. A guitarist who decided to change horses in the middle of the stream in college and focus his attention on drumming. He made a lot of friends along the way. He asked for help. A beautiful spirit, like Ken Navarro, a loving, kind, and positive heart, and the music reflects all of that. Oh, Fortunate Action is just beautiful. He is called many things, positive reviews for this project, no joke, and it's described as modern jazz in that it's very much traditionally based, but he makes it seem so organic and in so mass appeal because some of the straight-ahead stuff, you have to really love jazz in order to reach out and grasp it. You have to really know the legendary status, the roots of it, appreciate all of it. But with Alex, he makes that color palette so palatable that you're not sure what you're listening to, other than the fact that it is breathtakingly put together, thoughtfully created, and reflective instrumental music. Just beautiful. And Alex is coming to the area. Twins Jazz offered him a really nice gig. So he's looking for house parties. So I wanted to talk to Ken Navarro about house parties because Ken loves them. But I'll bring it up tonight at the Baltimore Jazz Alliance Board of Directors meeting, and we'll get Alex situated. Alex, are you hearing me? We're going to get you situated, honey. We heard Reagan Whiteside, too, and Marion Meadows. That started the set. Yes, Reagan on her flute, Marion on sax from Evolve. The song was called Until Next Time. Just so you know, Reagan is in the process of being nominated, and it's a preliminary nomination. I don't think the final nominations are out, but Black Women in Jazz, the award show, is going to be happening on the 2nd of May in Atlanta, Georgia. And it's one of those .orgs. You'll find it, Black Women in Jazz. Or go to Reagan Whiteside's Facebook page or her website, and you'll find the information there so you can vote for Reagan. Because you know what? She needs to win an award. She's really trying hard as a businesswoman to get things done with her new CD. Worked really hard to make sure everybody heard Evolve. Great music. Beautiful, positive, inspirational music. And then there's Marion Meadows. There's a lot I could say about Marion. He's such a rascal. He's going to be at Jacksonville Jazz Festival happening, I believe, May 25th. Lot of great people there, including Lau Tizer with Karen Briggs. Mm-hmm. Some other folks you know and love. My friend Shannon West will be there, I'm sure. Whew, more of this Florida talk is coming up. Yeah, let us make mention of this right now, because it's never easy to talk about losing someone in the jazz community, especially with the glorious history that Wayne Henderson had. I was fortunate enough to see him at the Birchmere a few years ago. He was making his way around the tour circles once again. He was not only trombonist, but a producer through the years and a co-founder of the Jazz Crusaders, along with Joe Sample, Wilton Felder, and Styx Hooper, who I am sure are feeling the loss so deeply that words cannot say. Wayne passed away on my son's birthday on the 4th of April at the age of 74 of heart failure. I know that we never get out of this world alive. None of us are ever going to live forever, but some things just hit you hard and unexpectedly. It's not that people are in necessarily great health either. It's just that when that day comes, shoo! It's big. So here's Joe Sample just getting over his prolonged illness, getting his health together, and now he loses Wayne Henderson. You know that Joe and Wilton and Styx are thinking, all right then, it's just around the corner. So you live your days as if today was the last day you ever had, and make sure that you do right in that day, because God may call you at any time. And Wayne found that out. I do believe that he was ready. And maybe he had not been feeling so well, but I know that he is going to be beloved, certainly for whoever is listening to this show, for as long as we live. That music, well, let's get a taste of that, shall we? Are the Jazz Crusaders, their debut from 1961, Freedom Sound on Hyper Jazz.
wanna be free, gotta be free, wanna be free, gotta be free. Wanna be free, gotta be free, wanna be free, gotta be free. Knew she can make it right, working late every night. Got to make money to put food on the table, and daddy had to do the same. He knew he had to do his part, so none of his children would get caught up in the game. So I'd be young and free. Daddy made a way for me. He paved the road so my burden is lighter. And mama did just the same, dropping love just like rain. She said, guard your heart, for from it come here to the line. Free, free, free. Got to do well in school, obey that golden rule. Treat another man like you want to be treated. Share with your brother, man. If you needed giving him a hand, for in the end you might just need him. So I'd be young and free. Daddy made a way for me. He paved the road so my burden is lighter. And mama did just the same, dropping love just like rain. She said, guard your heart, far from it, come the issues of life. Oh, free, free, free. Gotta be free, wanna be free, gotta be free. Though they both left this earth, I wanna thank them for my birth and all of the gifts they left for a lifetime. It truly was a sacrifice, they didn't even think twice. 7th of 8, and Gregory will be his name. Be young and free. Daddy made a way for me. He paved the road so my burden is light up. Mama did just the same, dropping love just like rain. She said, guard your heart, for from it come the issues of life. Oh, free, 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 free. Free, free. Wanna be free, gotta be free, wanna be free, gotta be free. Wanna be free, gotta be free, wanna be free, gotta be free. Wanna be free, gotta be free, wanna be free, gotta be free. Wanna be free, gotta be free, wanna be free, gotta be free.
Man, that song just stone cold freaking flows and flips and funks and fortifies, doesn't it? Woo! That tune is, to me, the crown jewel of Liquid Spirit by Gregory Porter. He just let it all out. Phew. Man, it's just so beautiful. It's just called Free. That's what it's called. And everything that is part of his journey as far as jazz and R&B and soul and funk and a little bit of rock and roll in there, it's all there. He's just really special. He had two previous CDs on Motema, but this particular record is on Blue Note, his debut, mostly originals, 11, and then there are a few beautiful standards. He's got, among others, Yusuke Sato and Tivan Pennicott on saxes. He likes to have his saxes close by. Dizzying schedule, Gregory Porter, honestly. You just are not going to believe when you go to his website what you will see in the way of how many dates this man is doing this year, because everybody wants him. Everybody wants to hear that voice in all its richness. It's really something, too, to consider, that the most touching thing about Gregory Porter, it was he and his mom coming up, and he heard Nat King Cole and loved Nat King Cole so much. One day his mom said to him, "You sound like Nat King Cole, honey." And by that, he took it to mean that Nat King Cole was his dad. So I'm not sure when he found out that that was not the case, but someone who wrote a review of Liquid Soul said, probably not knowing this story, this reviewer said that when he does one of the songs on Liquid Spirit, it's as if Nat King Cole has entered the room and has sort of taken over. Woo! Love that stuff. Gregory Porter. So glad to be able to play him for you. Jazz Crusaders Freedom Sound from 1961. Beautiful stuff, along with Joe Sample and Wilton Felder and Styx Hooper and the late, great Wayne Henderson, who we just lost. Also Roy Gaines on guitar and who else is on here? Yeah, Jimmy Bond on bass. Whew, rest in peace, Wayne. We'll see you again someday. I sure hope that's the case. So many of our beauties, just stone cold legends and beloveds in jazz, taking leave of us. Too many to count, huh? Let's turn our attention to something very, very cool. Got to play this, the second Hammond B3 organ for the day. Compliments of Joey DeFrancesco with David Sanborn and a song from, let's see, why do I have to refer to the title? Only Everything, because there's so much on my mind. This is called The Peeper on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Thank you. Yes, sir. Woohoo! Larry Coryell and Company. Yep. LarryCoryell.net if you want to find out where he is going to be. And I'm going to tell you about where he's going to be, other than the fact that 1989 was the year for that. Shining Hour, the name of the CD. Floyd gets a gig, especially for Tim and Ponta Gorda today. Larry's going to be at a benefit for a friend who is, this particular gentleman had his home and office partially destroyed by robbery. It's going to be with Gil Paris on the 10th of April. It will be at the Falcon in New York. If you can help out a buddy, please do that. That would be great. Whew. Joey DeFrancesco backing up David Sanborn and Steve Gadd from Only Everything and The Peeper from 2010. That was great stuff, wasn't it? Oh, my. A tribute to Ray Charles and Company. David Sanborn loved to do that. Listen, thank you so much. Thank you, Ken Navarro. Thank you, Beach, so much, and everybody who's gone back and forth today. We won't see you on Thursday. We'll see you next Tuesday here on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. It has been a blast and a half. I can't tell you how much everybody means to me as we approach 106,000 listens. Have a great weekend. Have a great week. See you soon on Hybrid Jazz.